writing craft book on your bedside table? Has it been there for a while?
Do you keep meaning to get past chapter 2, or chapter 1, or just the first page?
Then the Words to Write By podcast is for you. Hi, I'm Renee. I teach composition and creative writing to college students. My background is in poetry, but I'm working on my memoir.
And I'm Kim. I'm trained as a science journalist, but now I'm trying my hand at short fiction. Each week we'll be tackling a chapter of some well-known, but perhaps not so well-read, writing craft book.
Together, we'll uncover brilliant insights, face the hard truths, and totally disagree when the author is wrong.
This is our podcast, after all.
And then, we're going to take what we learn and apply it to our own writing.
By doing the book's suggested exercises.
We're inviting you to read along, or just tune in for the Cliff Notes version.
We're committed to improving our own craft, one writing advice book at a time, and we'd love for you to join us. Welcome to our workshop podcast.
Our first workshop podcast.
Yes, at the end of each of our regular episodes, we challenge each other to do an exercise from the book that we're reading, and we record one of them as part of the podcast, and the other one we used to put on our Patreon account, but we've decided actually they're good enough to just release them on their own. And so we'll be releasing at least one. Sometimes we might fold some other old ones into it, but basically this way will be a weekly podcast.
Weekly!
Yeah.
That's a step up.
No pressure.
No pressure. None at all.
All right. So let's start by reading what the exercise is. This is from Writing the Memoir by Judith Barrington, her chapter six. Chapter six, Moving Around in Time in Memoir, obviously. And she shows how one can map out a timeline in a memoir, especially since you tend to jump around for timelines. So this is the exercise we chose to do.
The key is to keep the reader, like, give them signposts so that they can keep track of where you're going.
Do you want to read it?
Sure. So this is the first one out of the suggestions for writing at the end of the chapter. Find two or three short memoirs, short story length as opposed to book length, and for each one, create a timeline. As you make the timeline, list in your notebook the words or phrases the author uses to pinpoint a particular time, whether it be a specific day or an identifiable span of time. Phrases such as later that day, or when I moved to Philadelphia, my second year in college, or long before that summer, and so on.
All right, so Renee brought some books, and she had one that's called The Best Creative Nonfiction, Volume 1, and this is from...
It's edited by
Lee Gutkind, mm-hmm. And this is from 2007.
You can get all of these essays on their website, the Creative Nonfiction website.
All right. And I actually picked two ones to do because the first one was really short, but I'd already mapped it out. And Renee has read this, but we're going from my maps. The first one is Full Gospel by J.D. Schraffenberger. And this is a fairly straightforward, just a kind of collection of memories.
So what's it about first?
It is about his family, the various people in his family, and how religion played into their reaction both to his brother's hospitalization and his cousin's death. And that was all in basically two pages. So it's not very in-depth. So some of the time points, it starts off, what I see as a child on my way to church. So we're jumping to when he was a child.
Mm-hmm. Now, is it the now? So Barrington talks about this now that you have to anchor the reader in. Right. Uh-huh. And then you can go back in time from this now. Is he saying it's on his way to church? Like now, whoever the writer is now writing about this, he still goes to church and thinks about this? Or is it when he's a kid going to church?
The idea is that he is, wherever he is religion-wise, it's very different than who he was as a child.
Right. But read the signpost again.
What I see as a child on my way to church with my grandparents.
Sorry. You can cut all that out.
No, basically, I should read the whole thing, because obviously what I see as a child is one thing, but the whole signpost has my grandparents.
Right, so I guess that's a lesson for us all, to make sure it's very clear. There's a distinction between, you know, the now going on in your life and then going on in your past life.
And this is all very straightforward. However, there is a little bit of fun time stuff at the very beginning, where he's describing stuff. And he's describing the southern Indian hills, knobs, knolls, and ancient ripples where glaciers halted at Ohio. So we've got a way back in the past.
That's like millions of years ago.
Yeah. So you're not just limited to your own timeline.
Right, exactly. You can go way before humans existed.
Mm-hmm. And then he also talks about millions fled the mountains mid-century during the so-called Great Migration and headed north. And his grandparents were part of that. So now we're, you know, we're past the glaciers, but still his own family history.
So he went from being a kid to going millions of years ago to being going a little bit forward, but before he's born.
Right.
Okay.
And then he talks about how his grandfather came with that diaspora. He worked at General Electric's and until he retired. Now he's a preacher, full gospel.
Okay. And so he keeps going back into the past before he's born, but then leads us into him being born and his grandfather being retired.
Yep. Mm-hmm. I mean, you could also say that now he's a preacher is happening in the current now when the family's all much older.
Right. So it's not completely clear,
mm-hmm.
but we have definitely gone forward in time.
Right. So they're very simple signposts. And then talks about the church and the people. And then we get a number. This, like, there are four sections in these and they each get numbers.
They're literally called 1, 2, 3, 4.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So it's a leap with a number.
Yes, so that's a signpost right there. And then the next section two starts with when my brother Jonathan is hospitalized at 14 years old.
Mm, okay, so he's a teenager probably. Or actually, he could be any age.
Hard to tell. But basically, started him off as a kid and now his brother, a teenager, but he seems to have a clear memory of this. So that's a jump. And that's just a paragraph. And then we jump to next one, three starts on holidays. Grandpa says grace before we eat. And this part section just talks about his family. There were a couple times he said on holidays. There was also on my way to church, where it's kind of it's not a specific instance. It's a amalgamation or like a is happening every year on holidays.
It's like that tense that Barrington talked about mm-hmm. in that section, the has versus have things mm-hmm. that are continuously ongoing.
Right. And then the final section is when my cousin David dies.
Mm.
He mentions his brother who was out of the hospital for the funeral. So, like, I think this it's fairly linear forward. You know, as a child, then his brother's hospitalization, this kind of range of holidays, and finally his cousin's funeral.
Right. So I guess the range of holidays stands in for him growing up as a kid.
Yeah, that sounds good.
Interesting. And when does it end?
It ends with the funeral.
Oh, the very end of the funeral.
Yeah.
During the funeral. Wow.
Mm-hmm. The timing isn't nearly as critical as it is kind of looking at his family and the personalities and the way religion played into it.
Right, and trauma and how they dealt with it.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and there's some dark humor in there, which I really liked. That was a really good piece, though.
Yeah.
Dear listener, go find it. What did you think about the signposting? Did you feel like it was good, like you were following along as a reader?
So I approached this piece trying to figure out what the timeline was. And so maybe that was why I was more aware of when I was confused. Like the fourth section was the point where I was confused because I suddenly had another significant moment. And my question was, did David die before or after his brother was hospitalized?
Mm.
And I had to read along a little ways to figure out what that was. If I wasn't reading it to find the timeline, I think I would have been just fine, and then it would just popped in when it was, when it happened, because it wouldn't have been as important to me when all this stuff was happening.
Right. I find it interesting that the very beginning, is it labeled one, the very, very, no.
It is.
Oh, it is, it is. So the one spans millions of years back and forth.
Yeah.
Right. And then it goes in a linear, maybe, I don't know, 20 to 30 year time span.
Right. Well, actually, what it is number one is this nebulous, as a child, this is my family and how we got here. Number two is a specific moment. Number three is a nebulous time frame during his childhood. And number four is, again, a specific moment.
Interesting. Okay. I mean, I thought it worked well.
Mm-hmm. If I were just to read this straight, I wouldn't think there was much of a structure to it.
Mm.
But in fact, it is very much a structure through time, even though that's not the highlighted aspect.
Yeah, it's actually kind of fascinating now that we analyze it and like take a step back and look at it and mark a timeline. And you can see that it is organized. But you're right. I don't know if I would have even been aware of it if I had just read through it and been like, okay, cool.
Yep.
That's the piece. I guess subconsciously we would know, right?
Yeah. I think subconsciously that's why you have structure. That's why you don't necessarily have to call out your structure, but you still need to have it because it helps the reader.
Real quick, so there's these numbers, right? What if the numbers were gone? Would we have noticed?
I think we still would notice time jumps, but we've been more confused on why. I think if they were just big spaces between paragraphs, you might not have picked up onto like the third jump.
Right. So in this case, putting in numbers was necessary.
Mm-hmm.
I wonder why they didn't just use, I mean, I like to use the like three asterisks, like star, star, star.
Right. But they're like number two is so short. Star, star, star. Maybe it, for a piece this short, that's just a bit too much.
And lastly, now. What is the quote unquote now perspective of the author?
I'm feeling like it's middle age.
Okay.
Definitely long enough for him to be more reflective.
Right.
Because there's a lot of pain in this memoir, and it feels like it's more removed.
So they've had time to recollect, organized, very well organized piece, and to have a clear point of view about it, a judgment, as Barrington would call it.
Yeah. So I did that one, and then I turned the page and looked at the next one and thought, Rebecca Skloot, how do I know that person? And then I remembered, and I'm like, wait a second, I want to do this one too.
Who's Rebecca Skloot? How did you know her?
She wrote The Immortal Life of Henrietta Lacks.
Holy cow, really?
And I've actually seen her present for a workshop. And actually, the workshop talked about timelines and how she organized stuff.
Wow, that's awesome. Did she use note cards?
Yes. Well, she uses note cards, she uses recordings, and she uses assistants.
Assistants. Aw.
Yep, yep.
No, so what's this piece called?
It's called The Truth About Cops and Dogs.
So this has a journalistic aspect to it.
This is very much a journalistic aspect. In fact, the now is not very far from when the main events happen.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Mm-hmm. And it just so you know, it starts off, 8 months ago, if you told me I'd be obsessed with a little old Greek guy and fantasizing about killing his dogs, I'd have said you were nuts.
So 8 months ago.
Something happened 8 months ago that completely changed her perspective.
So this was written, like, maybe she just started writing about it, like, within, I don't know, it could have been any time, within a few weeks to a few months of events from this taking place, right?
So she's a journalist, and this has a very journalistic feel to it. I get the feeling that basically somewhere around 7 months ago, she had enough distance between the events, and she had done enough research, and she'd done enough other stuff that she's ready, and she was sending in this piece. So my guess is that she was writing it probably about four or five months starting afterwards, and this is when it was submitted.
Do you think, like, the drama was still unfolding while she was writing? Do you think new stuff was coming up and she was inserting it as it happened?
Yeah, especially since the ending kind of implies that it's still ongoing, and then there's an afternote at the very end.
Wow, that's really cool.
So, just to finish the thing, if you had said a little old Greek guy's pack of 8-9 junkyard dogs had been roaming the streets of midtown Manhattan for years, attacking people and tearing apart their dogs while the officials said, sorry, that's not our problem, I'd have called you a conspiracy theorist. A pack of wild dogs in Manhattan never happens. Boy, would I have been wrong. And then it goes on to, the Sunday before Christmas, I woke up to my friend Elizabeth pounding frantically on my door. And Elizabeth had been walking this Rebecca's dog, Bonnie, and the dog had been attacked by these wild dogs.
What was the timestamp she has on that, or the signpost?
The Sunday before Christmas.
The Sunday before Christmas. But she doesn't give a year.
No.
But it's within that, she said 8 months, so it's within that year.
Yeah. So this is a very recent piece for 2007, and it was probably published within a year of the events happening.
So as she's writing it, it was the most recent Christmas.
Right. Before we jump more into this, if you hear the sounds in the background, it's yard day here at my my complex, and so there's a leaf blower.
Yes. Yes. We definitely are two ladies in a closet.
So what happens is we've jumped to 8 months ago, and then she's laying out very specifically what happened in that moment.
So what happened?
Elizabeth came in and said that her dog had been attacked. Rebecca Scoot puts on like is in her underwear, throws on a coat, runs out. The doorman, maintenance man, points the way. She finds her dog mauled in the snow.
So it's a step-by-step scene.
Yeah, it's clearly all laid out. This is all happening very quickly.
Right, and just to lay a quick, you know, for context of all of these signposts, essentially, it's about how her dog was attacked by a bunch of dogs and her trying to get them taken care of.
Right, so the trauma part of the story with her own dog is very short. Basically, was horribly mauled. And the events that went into it. And then we get a break. And there's no number this time. It's just a break. And it says, a few months before my 17th birthday. So we're going way back in time at this point.
Mm-hmm.
And she talks about how she and her friend found Bonnie as a puppy in a box with a bunch of other puppies. And then just kind of a profile of this dog as she was growing up and all these wonderful things. So, like, for the record, this woman is a science journalist, and she is darn good, because we start off with an incredible scene, and then we do a whole character study about why we should care about this dog.
Right.
So we are primed to find out what happens. And the first section ends without us knowing just that her dog is, that Bonnie is seriously injured. We don't know what's going to happen. Then we get minutes after the attack. Again, we got the paragraph spacing. So we have the whole background about Bonnie and her relationship, including, actually, and at the end of this description of her, in the last year, we'd moved from one city to next. We'd gone from three-bedroom house into a tiny apartment, divorced my husband, and cried together as my other 15-year-old dog, Serrano, died in my arms.
A lot happened.
Yep.
Many years. The span of many years in one sentence.
Yeah. Or that one's actually just a span of a short period of time that has happened to her, to show that her life has changed radically.
Oh, that could have been like a year?
Yeah.
Oh, I see. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. In the last year, we've moved.
So in the last year, a lot of trauma has taken place.
Yeah. Or if not trauma, just life.
Yeah.
And now there's a space and minutes after the attack.
We're back.
The memoirs we've been reading have been enough. The events are happening enough in the past that we don't have quite that immediacy. But in this memoir, there is definitely immediacy. And, you know, minutes after the attack brings us right back. She talks about getting the dog to the hospital and the dog going to surgery. And then the next thing I remember is Elizabeth saying, we should call the police. And me thinking, damn right.
So it's interesting because there is a now, but there is another now, right? There is, the events are taking place in front of you as you're reading them, but the author from 8 months later is interjecting and saying, what was I thinking at the time?
Yeah.
Because that could have been something they said out loud.
Right.
Right. But instead, she decides to interject.
Mm-hmm. And actually, the next page is devoted to them trying to call somebody to report this and get some police or somebody involved. It doesn't go very well.
Yeah, they all say, they kick it to different organizations until eventually everyone says, well, there's no law.
Exactly. And that's the point of this piece, is really to highlight the fact that there was no law.
Yeah, if your dog got attacked, nothing would be done.
Yeah, in New York City.
In New York City.
She also, in this section, that night with Bonnie still unconscious after hours of touch-and-go surgery, I walked into the lobby of my apartment and overheard two neighbors talking. And that's how she finds out about Harry and the dogs and the setup.
Right. It sounds like she's going through her research process. Well, not research process, but we get to be with her as her quest to figure out how to get somebody to do something through the city.
Mm-hmm. Although there's a now, it's 8 months before, it's a very intense 8 months, and she lives it out as it's happening. And this happens with memoir, too, where we're really invested in the things as they unfurl, even though we know that the narrator is somewhere in the future in a better spot or whatever.
Right, but we're tagging along on her journey through this bureaucracy hell.
So we get to the end of her finding out about this person, Harry, and we get another break. And then we get Harry Theodore was born Theocharis Pelagonius on a Macedonian goat farm and raised in Greece, where he trained Dobermann pinchers to hunt and kill wild boar. He came to America at 18.
Wow. Did they tell us how old he was?
He's in his late 60s when this was printed.
So she time travels to his birth,
mm-hmm.
to 70 years ago, and then jumps 20 years or 18 years later until he was 18.
Well, what she does is she's giving a whole character study of him. And so we have this new timeline that has nothing to do with her, really, until, you know, their lives interact.
Of the Greek's life.
Mm-hmm. Where he is, where he came from, research about him. I like this. I went home, I typed Harry Theodore into a few search engines and couldn't believe what I found. A feature-length profile in the New York Times that ran in 1984 and a small news story in the New York Daily News. These were not stories about a man with a dangerous pack of dogs. They were about Harry, a colorful and quintessentially New York character.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
So in the past, she found evidence of a past.
Yeah.
Two journalists talking about how it wasn't always this way.
A step back. One thing about journalism is that often you tell a story, but when you get into it, you realize that you're not the first person there or that everyone knew about this. And one of the things about this story is that, no, she did not uncover this homeless man that had these wild dogs that nobody knew about. In fact, she uncovered a situation that had been going on for years, and she was just the latest person to this story.
I find it fascinating that journalism feels a lot like archaeology.
Yeah.
I mean, she uncovered these old stories. I find that fascinating.
Mm-hmm.
And they've been so old that nobody knew about them anymore.
Well, no, it's not so much that. Actually, people did know. I mean, people knew about this guy.
Well, from the 80s, but when was this published?
Well, this was published in 2000. This book was published in 2007.
Right, so yes, it was the New York Times, but it's not on anyone's radar anymore.
No, that's true. Anyway, and then we get another space. And the morning after the attack, I sat down with my phone and notebook and started what would become months worth of calls to the same string of organizations. So we're back to her whole situation of not being able to find anybody that's willing to be responsible about this.
I will say that I appreciate her not giving us a whole, like, long, laborious description of her doing all of the research. Sometimes you will get that, which is fine if the piece calls for it. It's important that we know she had to do a lot of research, but for this piece, it's important that it stays very immediate.
I don't know. I mean, first of all, I think she does go into her research quite a bit.
But like, does she go through the journey of her research other than, what was the sentence? She poured months over it?
Right. But then she goes into the different org groups she called, the different officers, the conversations she had. And then she talks about the building, the codes that she looked at.
So she does give us a uh-huh. bite.
Yeah, and then talk to this expert and that expert. So that's
how much page?
Two pages.
Space? Wow. Okay, can you just cut out what I said before? Because I don't remember all of that. So I guess it was
so well written.
Well, it's a summary, isn't it? It's one of those dynamic summaries from previous chapters where they talked about how the summary can't just be, you know, boring to get from one place to the other. It's got to be dynamic with details. Is that considered a summary?
No, I don't think so. I think it's a bunch of scenes. I think she basically figures out how to string the scenes together because there's a bunch of dialogue. Like, I'll just read a little bit. So she talks about talking to Officer Baldino at the NYPD 10th Precinct, and he said, "Oh yeah, I know who you're talking about. Those dogs are really bad. I don't know why they don't stop them." "Who's they?" I asked. "Aren't they you?" "No," he said. "Call the ASPCA." Then she talks to Griselle at the ASPCA. "Oh, right," she said. "We get complaints about him all the time." So, like, she peppers the conversations she has. I mean, this is very journalistic here.
It's very listy. It's kind of like a bullet point list of the conversations that she had, right?
Right, but each of them showing how they bump it off to somebody else.
Right, and it's in dialogue.
And it's in dialogue.
It is scene, 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 scene.
It's scene, 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 scene.
Okay, and that's very journalistic.
Yeah, because in journalism, you do everything to keep the eyes on the page.
I mean, it worked. Yeah. Okay.
She alternates between these very specific timelines and then something that's a bit more broad. So then we get a section where, I'm not going to go into it because it's a bit too complicated, but she does actually summarize a whole bunch of different people that were attacked, or dogs were attacked by these other dogs. And there's like 5 years ago in response to attack. My neighbor who was attacked only a month before, you know, that's all sprinkled in there.
A month before, another signpost.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, it's the, there are a bunch of signposts. It's like, so we have these little timelines we're drawing out, and I didn't want to spend too much time trying to put all those spots in. Oh, and I forgot, there was the whole vet tech thing.
Yeah, and that to me helps identify who this author is and how old they might be for them to already have a tech license, a vet tech license, to have gone to veterinary school, whether they finished or not, but also knowing that now they are a journalist. So they've had a whole, and they're divorced and all this other stuff. They've had a whole life.
Yeah.
Of education and just life in general before, when these events took place, before they wrote it down.
Yep. Actually, so the vet tech stuff, I missed it because it happens in the very beginning when she's still running to see her dog. So basically when she's told that her dog is bleeding and the maintenance guy says, don't look. I was a veterinary technician for 10 years.
10 years, yeah.
And then she has all the various things that she's done, including autopsies on dogs. Which is to say, when I heard the phrase pack of wild dogs, I had a clear visual about what I was going to find.
We know her age through the dog's age. She was 17 when she got the dog, right? Or 18?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and the dog's about 15 years old.
So she's 30,
yeah,
ish, or a little over, sure, her mid, early 30s.
Yep. So that's just tucked in there at the very beginning. But it's nice. It's put there so that, like, we know what her, so we have a little flashback of who she is. So when she comes upon her dog, we know that she's got this.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, actually, that was a really great scene. She becomes the vet, and then she like has this distance between herself and the motion of seeing her dog being, had been mauled, and so she just goes into vet mode and puts it on a table and starts, you know, like looking at the scene as if she, it wasn't her dog.
Mm-hmm.
And that was cool, and it, you know, shows her expertise,
right? So we are at least 6 pages into this, 7 pages into it. And now we jump back again to the events immediately happening. On the morning, Bonnie came home from the hospital, and then again jumps back into her looking, trying to find justice and trying to find somebody to do something about this.
Right. So maybe within the week that the attack happened.
Yes. And we've had a whole bunch of her like being jumped around various people. But I love this line here. I ran back to my apartment and did something most people can't do. I called press offices and said, "Hi, I'm a reporter writing an article about a pack of dangerous dogs that have been roaming the streets, attacking people and dogs for years. Numerous people have filed complaints with your organization, and I'd like to find out why nothing has been done."
Mic drop. Nothing is scarier.
I'm doing a story on this. Would you like to talk to me?
Yeah. What was the office that she called?
Well, she just called the information offices for each of these organizations.
Ooh. Damage control.
Yeah.
I'd imagine that's like the worst thing you want to hear, mm-hmm, is a reporter calling your office.
And unlike a lot of the memoirs we talked about where, you know, the truth is fungible or we forget stuff, you know, she was recording these conversations because, you know, this dialogue is roughly what it was.
Oh, because it's legal to record conversations in New York, right?
Well, I'm sure she said, can I record this conversation?
Oh, interesting.
Or she's taking notes at the same time. She's just that fast.
Right. But I actually do think it is legal. It's not legal unless you alert the person in other states.
There are several companies. I don't, maybe New York is
one of them.
And then there's one more timeline that I actually am not going to go into it too much, but she then jumps into Elizabeth and Bonnie's timeline. So there's like nested timelines in here to get the story because it's a very rounded story.
So Elizabeth and Bonnie's timeline. So like from
exactly what happened to Elizabeth when they were attacked.
I see. So she's going into the attack.
Yeah.
Right.
She wasn't there, but this is Elizabeth's account.
It's interesting that is mentioned or described well into the piece.
Mm-hmm.
She starts the piece with her experience of running downstairs and there's the dog. But middle of the piece, then she goes into what happened before she saw the dog.
Yeah.
That's interesting. I wonder why she did that.
Well, I think part of it is that we bring the immediacy of this all. At this point of the story, we know that Bonnie's okay. This is her kind of jacking up the emotion again to say exactly what happened in that attack.
I'm just wondering why she waited so quote-unquote long to go. How long have we been into the piece before she brings this up?
This is about 9 pages in.
So it's the end.
Pretty close to, yeah.
Fascinating.
Mm-hmm.
This would be a great piece to, like, analyze.
Yeah, well, this is why, I mean, like, I've seen her talk about how she lays out her pieces. And, yeah, she's very methodical. She's got a great delivery. And it moves into kind of the aftermath of stuff that's happening further along. Actually, at this point, she jumps to the present. Because everything's written in past about how she's trying to do something. And it then jumps to... So Harry's pack is still going strong. A few weeks ago, a neighbor told me the dog cornered a group of children playing in front of the Japtitz Center. Again, more instances of happening. And then we have, so yes, I'm still obsessed with Harry and his dogs. We're now at this point 8 months later where she's writing this story, and she is in the now, and we are hearing about what's happening in the now.
So she's sandwiched the obsession.
Yeah.
She started with the obsession. Now she's ending with the obsession.
Mm-hmm. She talks about one more time jump here. It's also about an autopsy I did 10 years ago, an autopsy that still haunts me. And it's about a Rottweiler who killed a child, and she did an autopsy on the dog.
That is a really disturbing description, and mm-hmm. it will stay with me.
Yeah. And it's there at this point towards the end of the story because she wants something done about Harry and his dogs. At the point she's writing the story, nothing has happened.
Right. The stakes are really high.
Right.
She brings in an event from 10 years prior to up the stakes so high that a child could die.
Actually, a lot of the research is saying that this is the way these wild dogs work, is that they start on smaller dogs, they kind of develop a pack, and at some point, somebody gets killed.
It would be fascinating to chart the tension of this story, how she's like you said, she's racketing it up.
Uh-huh.
Higher and higher and higher and higher. You think, how much higher could it get since the beginning when the dog's been mauled? But it does get higher. It goes higher and higher because there's no one taking responsibility. There's nothing that can be done. And there is going to be an eventual, like, death of a child or a person.
Yeah.
So she keeps threading that through. Man, she's good.
And then it ends, it's still in the now at this point. The very end of it is she talks about seeing these dogs roaming the street, getting her dog out of the way, and then calling up these people. Talked to various people, and guess what they said? Are they attacking anyone right now? No, I said, as Harry's dogs ran past me towards the junkyard. Would you rather wait until they do? End of article.
That's it. Would you rather wait until they do? Because mm-hmm. that's exactly what they're doing.
So that's the end of her article. And then there's an afterword, which is, in response to this story and the outpouring of reader response that followed, the mayor's office of New York City condemned the lot where Harry lived, spayed and neutered all his dogs, and sent all but two of them to a shelter in Pennsylvania. They moved Harry into public housing in the Bronx, where he now lives with two of the 8 dogs that attacked Bonnie.
Wow. So it leaps forward after the publication of this piece and all sorts of stuff.
Well, that's not her. That's the people that put this book together that said, someone finishing reading this this piece is going to want to know what happened.
Oh.
And this is what happened in response. Wow. This is also different from a lot of memoirs because most memoirs don't cause a response. They aren't a call to action.
Right. It doesn't come back later.
Yeah. I mean, she wrote this piece because her dog had been attacked, and she found out about this pack of dogs that was going to attack somebody else, and she was going to do something about it.
And she did, she got a response.
She got a response.
She got the mayor to do something. I am fascinated that the owner could still own dogs after all that. Still owning dogs. Like, at some point, someone shouldn't be allowed to own a dog if it's clear they let them get that bad.
Well, I think... the implication is that, you know, that he was being watched more, so.
Right, yeah. He also, though, there is some dialogue in there where she does talk to him and he blames other people.
Yeah.
And that bothered me. And, yeah, he may not have all his faculties, but at some point, something's got to be done.
Yeah. Well, something was done.
Something was done, but he still owns dogs.
Yeah.
Okay.
Anyway, so I would say that this was an excellent exercise to go through that piece, because when someone does it well, you don't realize how much stuff they're doing.
Yeah. And oh my God, it tickled my analysis brain. This was such a fun conversation. Oh, I missed it. Oh, you can see how I ended up becoming an academic, right? Like, I was like, ooh. We're doing line by line analysis. How sexy.
So fun.
I need some popcorn.
There we go.
Isn't this fun?
This was really fun.
Didn't you do this in school?
A little bit, yeah, definitely. Oh, and I definitely did it for my science journalism class. We went through pieces. I'm sure we might have even gone through one of her pieces. I think there was one great one about the fish doctor.
Fish doctor?
Yeah.
Okay.
Fish veterinarians.
Fish veterinarians.
Yeah.
Fascinating. I'm going to read her stuff now.
I should put some links in the show notes.
Yeah!
We'll put links in the show notes. Okay. Thank you guys all for listening, and we'll be back next week with a full episode as we do more chapters of Judith Barrington's book, Writing the Memoir.
Yep. See you then.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Words to Write By is produced by Renee Nelson and Kim Smith-Adam. Our theme music is Roll Back the Carpet by Cool Cat Music. Have a great day.
It's not the ape's fault.